Hey everybody, it's Connor. Welcome to another amazing episode of Drama with Connor and Dylan McDowell, your favorite twins on the entire planet. And because we're your favorites, we know you can't get enough of us and you want even more. And I've got it for you. Drama Plus, which is the name of our Patreon, which is our bonus content platform, where for $5 a month, you donate to support the podcast. We can keep churning out these lovely interviews, chats, episodes, specials with you. And in addition to supporting us, we give you the goods. You get access to our Instagram close friends, and you get multiple bonus episodes a month where Dylan and I chit-chat with each other about all the fun, scintillating, sizzling Broadway, pop culture, personal life drama that you're craving. All right. Well, thank you for finding us. Enjoy this episode and go to patreon.com/thedramapodcast for more. All right, on to the show.
Press play.
Curtain up and now we're in.
It's time to take spin.
The shade and tea
to spill.
Ooh, drama.
Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book? Who got nominated?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today?
Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more.
Drama.
Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell. Connor, the fun is already happening. You know, I hesitate to record at night lately because, you know, the sleep apnea got me, gal. But I am feeling so alive and awake and happy with today because we've already had 20 minutes of fun banter with our guest.
I know. I wish some of it was on the air, but a lot of it can't be.
And that's when you know it's a good episode in store.
That's how you know. Mm-hmm. It is a dark, stormy night in New York City, by the way. So it's moody, but we're going to settle in for this lovely, intimate chat.
Yes, I love it. Now, you mentioned to me something shocking because, you know, we're now in our 30th year and you told me that one of the Real Housewives of New York of this reboot cast is 35, which is so shocking to me that I can be so close in age to someone who's on Roni.
I know. Erin is 35.
Erin. Oh my God. That's crazy.
She's the one who's the Republican.
Right.
But aren't most housewives...
I don't know if most is the answer. I think many of the white older ones are, but I don't think.
But remember the season when Carol was campaigning for Hillary and then at the reunion, Andy went around and he was like, who'd you all vote for? Or no, he asked, did you vote?
Oh,
like half of them didn't even vote or whatever. Oh my God. That was crazy.
They're delusional.
But yeah. Erin is 35. What do you think of her? I think she's two textbook housewives. Like she studied what you should be doing on these shows and she's not necessarily following her instincts.
I think she's bringing a lot of content. And I also think that when she came into that wreath-making party all pissed off, she did nail the assignment.
Okay, she did. She did. But Brynn was kidding.
Yeah, oh, I love her.
Brynn was kidding when she was flirting with the husband.
It's a tricky topic, especially with, you know, especially in that case, a monogamous straight couple.
True. It's funny because Erin only heard about it. She couldn't see it like we did. So we as an audience can obviously break it down and see, you know, the context of it.
The dramatic irony of it all.
I know. I saw two of the new Roni women in addition to some other housewives at an event I went to, but we're going to break it down on our Patreon. So everyone has to go to patreon.com/thedramapodcast to hear all of that because we don't want to take up more time than we have to today because we got to get into it with our guest.
I like the way you think.
You all are going to love.
They already do.
But this, I know this is going to be so fun. Dylan, please do me the honor and read that intro.
Absolutely. Our guest today is the icon, an Obie Award-winning American stage, film, and television actor. He is perhaps best known for his recent Broadway appearance as Thought Six in A Strange Loop, the 2022 Tony Award-winning Best Musical and Pulitzer Prize winner for drama. Before his show-snatching take as the Inwood Daddy garnered him praise, he debuted on Broadway as Hud in the revival of Hair. His performance as Memphis in Billy Porter's revival of The Life at New York City Center was praised in the New York Times as the number two in the 23 unforgettable theater moments of 2022, noted as the standout of the production, which also starred Let us see. He appeared in The Nick as Woodson opposite Andre Holland and is also seen opening the feature film 1001, which received Sundance's 2023 Grand Jury Prize, which is insane, alongside Teyana Taylor. Other stage appearances include The Loophole, Civil War Christmas, and This Ain't No Disco, as well as regionally in Rent, Camino Real, The Brothers' Size, A Ghost in Satin, and much more. He recently sang alongside Elvis Costello at the Gramercy in New York and even has his own upcoming self-titled debut album in the works. Please welcome to Drama, Antoine Hopper.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. That was beautiful. Why am I over here tearing up? That was nice. Thank you. Honey, that was everything.
Watching you react to the bio was so cute. You were just like so happy.
You know, God is good. I mean that. I'm really honored to be here. Congratulations to you both. I'm a fan. I think y'all are beautiful and brilliant in the same light. So thank you for having me.
I have chills now. Okay, we were laughing and having fun, and now you're being so sweet and sincere. Thank you, Antoine. It's an honor. Connor and I adore you. Connor and I were in like the Rush seats that were bar house right in front of where you stood in a strange loop. And so we saw every moment of yours.
Was I messing around with y'all sometimes?
Of course. Yes.
Was I giving you face? I think I was living for y'all. I think I was living for y'all.
Yes. That's so funny.
I think I was living for y'all. No, I live. I live. If people come and they're ready to play, you got my whole show. I'm going to give it to you. I like that. It. Yeah.
But listen, you know, you're also in New York. As Connor mentioned, it's a stormy summer's eve. And we like to check in with our guests before we dive into all the fun and the drama. Antoine, are you well?
I am well. Are you all? You know what? One thing about New York is you never know what the day is going to bring. And as I'm looking out my window, the sun is out and it's raining. This is a beautiful sign. Oh my God. Wait, you would think that there was a spotlight on. Look how pretty this looks. Oh my God.
Oh, the lighting.
Yeah, that's crazy lighting, right?
That's beautiful. Oh, my God.
I love New York City. I mean, come on.
How long have you lived here?
I've lived here for a while. And I'm excited to say that. Okay, y'all. Please don't edit this out. Okay, this is my question to everybody who knows what I'm talking about. When someone asks you that question, you got to one, go, are they being shady? And I know y'all aren't. And then two, it's like, well, you can't not answer it. And then three, you know, everybody's leaning in for the answer. So it's like, how do you answer it? Do you say the years or do you say a while?
Because I don't know what age you are now. You could be like, oh, I've been here since I was, you know, whatever age.
You know what? I have been here since I was 21 years old.
Okay. Oh, my gosh.
Take that and leave it.
Yeah. Yeah. And now you just turned 30 like us. So it's been a wonderful.
It's just been 8 years. I'm still navigating these streets. No, but you guys, literally New York has raised the adult Antoine, and it's like the best city to become yourself, to own yourself. I really, honestly, I don't know where else I would live. I love New York City.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Everyone has their own unique relationship with the city. I think that's what's so special about it. She means a lot to everyone.
I love her. She's not let me down at all.
So was it a dream to always move to New York?
Well, you know, I'm from Kansas, by way of Germany, Wiesbaden, Germany. I'm a military brat. And we moved to Kansas when my dad was stationed in Fort Riley, Kansas, and he was getting ready to actually go to the Iraq War. He actually was in three wars, Iran, Iraq, and Kuwait. But all to say, even when I was a little kid watching TV in my living room in Topeka, Kansas, I always idolized the city and the atmosphere of New York City. And then when I got the acting bug, I really became enamored with this city's vitality and with its creatures and inhabitants I had never seen anywhere else on TV. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So totally. It bit me, and I knew right away, which my first time coming here was during Showcase Week at Carnegie Mellon University. That was my very first time here. I stayed here for 5 days, and then we graduated. And the next day, I moved here, literally. I knew right away I wanted New York City.
Oh, what occurred in those 5 days that really solidified it for you?
Well, oh my God, and I hope he's listening. Well, so, you know, I just said I'm from Topeka, Kansas. And if anyone knows anything about Antoine Maurice Hopper, you know that I am in love with Jeff Crady. Jeff Crady was my hometown hero in the realm of musical theater. I was able to work on the show that he was the lead in as Pippin. But I worked in the realm of choreography, and I was literally in middle school looking up to Jeff Crady. All to say, when I moved here, Jeff Crady took me in his wings. He surprised me. He came to my showcase, and he actually would meet with me daily and help me navigate, you know, my meetings. You know, you're here for a slurry of meetings. So through Jeff Crady, Jeff Crady and Gregory Trico. Hi, Gregory Trico. I learned the subway system and was able to tell uptown, downtown, east and west. So by the time I did move here with my furniture in tow, moving into Manhattan mini storage and walking around Times Square, figuring out what am I going to do? I knew how to navigate MTA. And I think that's all you need to do. You need to know. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're right. Okay, wait. So I've got two different questions. I'm trying to decide where to take it, but I guess I'll go backwards before we go forward. So you mentioned that you got the acting bug, and then from there on, you knew you were like destined for New York. We ask all of our guests about the moment they got the bug, the moment they felt like they really connected with the arts in a bigger way. We borrow the term ring of keys for that. Do you feel like you had a ring of keys moment that you can pinpoint for when you got the bug?
I think there are two moments, but everyone knows my first theatrical happening, so to speak, I guess, was when I was 3 years old and I did The Three Wise Men. But now that I'm reflecting upon the instant where I was in a live concert and I realized this is what I want to do, I had like, I remember it was, I call them stars in your stomach, you know, when you just can't catch your breath and you sit up. It was during an assembly when Topeka High School Madrigals came to French Middle School to do a concert, and they were the top choir. And if anyone knows anything about Topeka High School was like the first million-dollar high school built in the nation in like the late 1800s. Yeah, like marble floors, 1,000-people stadium that they call gym, swimming pool underneath the whole school. It's unreal, but their choral department was unmatched. I mean, national champions. So to witness 16 individuals dressed up in suits and gowns, and they're singing madrigals, you know, your face is really animated. And I was obsessed. And the second time was when I witnessed Alvin Ailey in Kansas City. My mentors at the time, Dana Marino and her son Jason, took me to go see Alvin Ailey. And I was obsessed with the ballet revelations, and God blessed me to be able to set it twice at Carnegie Mellon University School of Drama. Can you talk about full circle?
That's incredible.
Come on.
Wow. Now, did that land itself onto your lap, or were you like, I want to do this? Can we do this?
The head of the program then, Liz Bradley, had seen me and two others. You might know them. Actually, three others. Patrick Cummings, Kara Lindsay, Kirsten Brackett, and Joseph Anthony Bird, four others, my classmates from Carnegie, I did a little adaptation of Wait in the Water and The Processional, as well as I've Been Buked. It was like a 6-minute teaser. And my professor came up to me and said, I'm friends with Judith Jamison, who we share the same birthday, May 10th. Me, Judith Jamison, Fred Astaire, Susie Laurie Parks, Bono. Anyway, let me just stop. That's why I'm crazy.
Legends only.
Crazy. Crazy legends, but all to say, Liz Bradley spoke to Alvin Ailey, and Judith Jamison gave Carnegie Mellon, on behalf of Liz Bradley and myself, permission to adapt it twice. So we did it for Showcase as a fundraiser. And the first time it was introduced to me was actually through a good friend, Hope Boykin, who is now becoming a choreographer within their own selves. But all to say, hello, Hope, how you doing?
A little Wendy moment there.
Oh my God. The listeners can't see, but you just did a fabulous Wendy Williams.
Uh-huh.
And it's still going.
I miss her every day, Antoine.
Oh my gosh. But you guys know what? Can I just go ahead and put this out there?
Yeah.
I could see you guys with two purple seats next to each other, and you would pull my focus every morning at 10 a.m. for an hour. I kid you not.
Oh
no, for
God.
Real. For real, for real, for real. You guys are on, you're on to something. So congratulations on your podcast. I can't wait for your show. Deb, That Mar Mercury, yes, thank you, Jesus. Oh my God. Yes.
You are amazing. Oh my God. I don't
from
even,
your lips, from your lips.
I'm stunned speechless on an audio platform where I have to speak. So let me just say. No, I'm kidding. So you were here for 5 days for Showcase.
Yes.
You moved here.
Yes.
What happened next? Was it hard to book your first gig? Like, I guess, because that's something that I guess a lot of performers don't often talk about. You know, you move to the city, and then most, I feel like, interviews with stars are like, oh, let's talk about this credit, this credit, this credit. But I'm curious, like, what happened? How did you get to these incredible gigs that you booked?
Thank you for asking that, Connor. And a thing that I love to do is I love figuring out all of our formulas. We're still figuring out our formula. But I get excited when people ask me this question because I'm hoping that someone's listening and I hope I can inspire someone enough to go, well, I'm going to do this. You did that. I'm going to do this. So I want to preface it with, this is what I did. You know, I graduated from Carnegie Mellon and right off the bat, God blessed me with an agent and a manager. And that's why I knew I wanted to come here. And I got here and my manager got me busy and my agent got me busy. And so I was doing probably about like, you know, 7 auditions a week. What saved me and what I want to put in everyone's lap is that I have a friend at the time named Michael John Lewis. How you doing, Michael? We got our equity cards together at the Muni. How you doing? And I moved here and he got me a job. Me and Kara Lindsay. How you doing, Kara? At Bubba Gump's. How you doing, Bubba Gump's? And guess what, you yes. all? So when I first moved here and I moved my furniture into Manhattan Mini Storage, I had to walk the first few days to figure out where I'm going to stay, but I had a job. So my job was Bubba Gump's. So that took off a lot of anxiety. So when I went into these rooms to audition, I knew already what I wanted and what I needed. Those were some of the best auditions I've ever had because I was fearless. You know what I mean? I didn't allow imposter syndrome to seep into my head, and I kept busy with Bubba Gump. So I moved here with a job, and within 3 weeks, I got my first job, which was MTC. A month later, I actually got my first musical theater gig, which was White Christmas. Honestly, when I got that, it just started picking up. I swear to y'all, I don't know what happened, but like, I was just really thankful. And I knew that my formula was, I know that I'm an actor, but I also know that I have a deep voice and I know that I can twirl. So I made sure I got into these twirl auditions where they had a featured role. For instance, White Christmas. I wanted the, hello and welcome to the, blah, 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 blah. I'm your back roommate, Jamie, blah, blah. Got it, y'all. And I could tap.
And then I sing bass.
And then they'd be like, can you read these sides? And I'd be like, can I? And then that was my formula to get, you know, White Christmas, The Who's Tommy, and so forth. And then we kind of pulled back. And then I went out regionally so I could get, by the grace of God, reviewed. So they would take me serious because, you know, you know what I'm going to say about musical theater. They don't think that we can act. And I have to, you know, remind people, I was taught that it's the elite. It's the elite art form. You know what I mean? You're expected to do singing, dancing, acting, and then some. That's kind of been my mission, to bring acting back to music theater and to also change people's perception around what a gay Black man can do in theater.
Was that part of, like, ingrained in you at Carnegie Mellon as well?
To really play to your strengths, you mean, Dylan? Or
Yeah.
You know what was ingrained to me at Carnegie Mellon was my heart is in the work. And I really feel like that means integrity. And if that means holding yourself accountable, why wouldn't you show or share that side of you? Why wouldn't you share that you love Jacobean? Why wouldn't you want to share that you can do restoration comedy as well as sing a nice, solid, you know, low C, 2 octaves, you know, below middle C? So I kind of turned it around where my integrity would not allow for me just to show one facet of myself. I want to try to introduce all of me to one project. And I started being truthful to myself and owning everything that I am and everything that I can be. You know, a lot of people see that and they get nervous and they get scared. I will say Carnegie Mellon pushed me towards that. And now I'm figuring out as I go my formula. Artistry possesses humility and discipline, but also integrity. I would say I really walked in that and stood on that at Carnegie Mellon University.
That's so special. I love to hear that. Now, who were you like looking up to? Like who did you want to be?
Oh my gosh. In the realm of theater? Mm-hmm. Okay. Outside of Whitney Houston, Tina Turner. And I was really big on tennis, so I was obsessed with Steffi Graf and Monica Seles. That kind of ages me, but I'll take it.
I was going to say, that's just not my realm. So I can't.
Yeah.
I was obsessed, if you can't tell, with the voices of Norm Lewis, Brian Stokes Mitchell, Mr. Neely, and Nathan Lee Graham. Those were the ones that I just love their voice, especially Brian Stokes Mitchell. Oh my God, the depth of his voice. And then he made it seem effortless. Like, it's just on another level. Same with Norm, on another level.
Yeah, he's like one of my ultimates.
Oh, Norm Lewis, Norm.
It's everything.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever got to work with Norm or Brian?
You know, when I came here, Jeff Crady surprised me because at that time, Les Mis was going on. So my friend Jeff was the youngest cover of the lead. What's the lead's name?
Valjean.
Valjean. And Jeff Crady actually gagged me and got me tickets. So one of my first Broadway shows was seeing a guy I idolized in Topeka as Valjean in Les Mis opposite Norm Lewis. I mean, like, come on. But he told me to wait for him on the stage. You know the rest. And I'm waiting. And just so you know, for my showcase, I sang The Devil You Know from Sideshow because I had just done it as well, choreographed it at Carnegie Mellon. Opposite Kirsten Bracken and Kara Lindsay were the girls.
So fun.
Devin Elau and Stephen Mazurek was Terry. And Joseph Anthony Bird was the narrator / overseer. It was iconic. I'm going to say.
God.
But all to say, I had just got through singing The Devil You Know. And I turn around and Norm's like, hey, buddy. And I'm like, oh my God. And I start jumping up and down. But that's the only, I've not really worked with many of my heroes outside of Billy Porter and Dee Shields. But no, I've not worked with Norm or Brian.
Well, we need to get into Billy.
I know. Yeah.
Because you did The Life.
Yes.
With Billy Porter.
Yeah. And you were like, was that the absolute standout? I mean, everyone was talking about you in that show. And that was the Tony-winning role, Mr. Chuck Cooper, back in the 90s. And was that Lettucey in the Lilliest role?
Yep.
Okay. Now, it was a reworked production, right?
Yes, it was reworked, revamped, rewritten.
That's so cool. How did that process come about for you?
It was unreal. You know, Billy Porter really is an underrated artist, meaning they do it all. You know what I mean? And then they walk it, talk it, and then we'll back it up and fuck it up. So I just love that, you know, Billy's history with this show was that Billy was cast in this show originally. And for whatever reasons, when it went to where it went, Billy wasn't able to go along with it. So for Billy to be able to, Tony Award winning Billy Porter, to be able to do a show that he actually was in the room working on, not only do it, but rewrite it. You know, the vision was that Queen was a sex worker, but she was of, you know, the trans experience. She was a trans woman. And back then, in the late 80s, being a sex worker in New York City, very dangerous times. Oh, yeah. And, you know, I love that with that, he was speaking to, of course, what's going on nowadays and the injustices with that. But he's also shedding light in a musical theater show, real life. And that's what I'm after. It doesn't matter what it is, what form. I just want to always tell real life and the truth. Mm-hmm. He didn't water anything down. He introduced the dangers of that kind of work back then, the dangers of that life and the life. Mm-hmm. And so it was pretty miraculous to work on something that everyone's familiar with, everyone loves, but he changed it in a huge way. But really not. He just made it more human. Mm-hmm. And so I have mad respect for Billy, and to witness Billy work on that. And I want people to realize that was a concert. That's not a finished version. That was literally the beginnings of something that I want to help make sure that we finish. But I'm very proud of Billy, and I'm proud of the work we did in 9 days. Not one of us had a script in our hand. That's unheard of. I mean, like, you know what I mean? We had full-out choreography by AC. Come on, AC is everything. And Lorna Ventura, associate choreographer. I just was in heaven. And James Sampleener and the New York City Center Orchestra, come on. Those were all new arrangements. Like that, my way of it. Boom, 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 boom. Everybody put their hearts into it. And I was just proud to be a part of something that everybody bought their A game to. Because of that one thing, integrity. So,
did you have to audition?
Of course I did. Do you know originally I didn't, they didn't even call me in. Oh. I had to, like, low key, I had to do a campaign to get their attention. And that's, and you know, that's why I kind of look the way I look on purpose when I want to beat my face or do this or do that, because my whole thing is, please don't judge me off of what you see. I went to a school and I studied what I do. Please don't cut yourself or the vision around me short by reading me for this gold eyeliner y'all can't see that is heavily beat on this face. Don't do that. Mm-hmm. I can play a boxer. I can get down. I can do anything. You know what I mean? By the grace of God. So, like, that was what I was big on. And I think that's why a lot of people were like, who is this person? And I'm like, I've been here. This is what I've been after. Mm-hmm. I, on purpose, am a gay Black man who's out. You will not judge me on the stage for my personal life. I want you to judge me off of what God has blessed me with. And I pray that you will forget I'm Antoine Hopper when you see me in the show. And I hope that's what happened with the life.
It sounds like it. I mean, I sadly was not in the city at the time, but it was praised universally. I mean, there's this incredible photo of you. It's like a very fierce moment. And it was called out by the New York Times as one of the stand. I mean, that's wild. That's the New York Times.
And that's why I love New York City. There's something about this city. Y'all have encouraged me. That was a scary moment for me. And I have never, like, the love poured in. I feel like the love poured in my way on purpose because people knew we were trying to do something different. And I think people could feel that this guy loves what he does, and say what you want. It was a moment and we all chased moments, right? And it was just a beautiful thing that I'm glad I got to share with New York City. Like, I'm not ever moving anywhere. I love New York City and I'm glad I got to share that with you all. Like, yes. For real.
You really do go full out. I mean, a strange loop. You ate. I mean, we saw it off Broadway, which, and what year was that?
That was right before the
2019.
2019, yeah.
2019, okay. And I mean, and then to be sitting, as we said, front row when we saw you on Broadway, you are just beyond.
Thank you. That's where I was saying, try to use all of you, y'all, but not at once, of course, but just try to, that's my challenge. How can I bring all of me to this and to support this show that we're all working on? So I just needed to say thank you.
For our listeners, for theater fans, I mean, A Strange Loop really made waves, won the Tony Award for Best Musical. So first of all, incredible. Mm-hmm. Won the Pulitzer for drama. On the podcast Drama, we're talking about the Pulitzer for drama. And there's two cast recordings. Mm-hmm. You were part of the whole experience that we were able to go and see. I have so many questions about that, but you played Thought Six. Uh-huh. And so for our listeners who saw the show, can you remind them, like, sort of what some of the fun parts you got to do in the show were?
Yes. So Thought Six was the bass. And I got to play the dad, Usher's dad, when we did that scene with Sarabi and Nala and everybody with the beers and 420. I mean, not the 420, but the, what's it called? 40. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I did In With Daddy. And I did his self-loathing. Hi, Usher. How you doing? It's your financial faggotry, baby. We need to discuss the situation with Shitty Bank student loans.
Incredible.
And of course, you know, I was a part of the choir, the judgmental in the closet deacon in the front mm-hmm. row.
I wish I could see it again. It was just such a remarkable piece. And what was that whole journey like? I mean, looking back on it now, I mean, I don't want to say it's over, but, like, you know, you were there from start to what many might say, like, the end. When you look back, what do you think about when you remember A Strange Loop?
You know, I think for that show, because I was involved 6.5 years, I grew into mature actor Antoine. Mm-hmm. It was a very hard challenge. You know, that show is very grueling. It's upbeat 90 minutes to do that for 6.5 years. Woo! I have mad respect for us Broadway actors, and even those that haven't even been on Broadway. I just have respect for what we do, what we have the nerve and the audacity to get up and do and repeat every day, 8 times a week. I don't think people realize the beasts that we are. And so I really grew into the mindset behind the formula of staying on the show this long and keeping it fresh, not getting lazy, but working because you've been in it for 6 years. That is a mind game with all its own. You know, on its own. And so when you guys say you came to see the show, that means a lot to me because I cannot stand when I go see a show. And as my professor calls it, larking. Please don't lurk on the stage because there's some of us that would give anything to be up there. I want people to go to a show and I pray that not only you see it in me, but in the show, you see, so to speak, the spark of creation. I want you to get the bug. I want you to see that this is it's a happening. I keep coming to that word. It's a happening. It's beautiful. You never know what someone's going through and what they may need. And a part of my ministry is I love to make people feel good and escape the reality through theater, like we all love to do. So, you know, that was the challenge for me, keeping it fresh 6 years later and keeping your head in the game, keeping your body in TikTok shape and taking care of yourself. I was always mindful. I always thought in the back of my head it would end up on Broadway. So it's kind of, you always had something to, I hate to say, but like dream for and live for. And I'm so thankful once again to everyone, especially the New York City theater scene for giving us Black people a chance. Like I mean that from the bottom of my heart. And I'm glad people realize it's a universal story about finding oneself and accepting yourself.
Absolutely.
100%. And it was also special. I mean, like you said, a universal story. But when I saw it, I was like, oh my God, I don't know if I've ever seen a piece of theater where Grindr's involved, Truvada's involved. They're saying bussy. Wow. There's, you know, it really was.
It's the way we talk in real life. You know, it didn't feel like something that was so removed and
wasn't like play dialogue. It was.
No.
I have a question, a specific question about the Inwood Daddy sequence in particular. When we saw it, Connor and I saw it at Playwrights, it felt like there was something different about it than when it was ultimately on Broadway. I don't know if it felt a little bit more, something felt maybe a little bit more uncomfortable about the situation at Playwrights than it was when I saw it on Broadway, which maybe felt just like typical hookup. I don't really know what the right way to explain, not like typical.
No, you're absolutely right.
Was there a conscious development of that scene as it went from off Broadway to maybe Woolly Mammoth and Broadway?
I'll be honest, it was relayed that it was becoming the event of the show.
Oh.
So.
That's interesting. It was certainly something I walked away from it, remember, you know, top of my mind.
Well, it's the real, I mean, it's the, if you're scoring this show and you had to make a mark, and remember it's 90 minutes, no intermission, where would be the mark from A to B? You know what I'm saying? First, it would be there.
Yeah.
That's when the tide changes. So. It's kind of like, no matter what you do, that's when the lights get dark. It's a whole new thing. You know what I mean? I'm not going to say any of the dialogue, but it's so brilliantly well crafted. No matter if you did it with nothing on stage, it's going to be a new moment. So that's the beautiful artistry of Michael R. Jackson. And that's why A Strange Loop is one of those stories structurally. It's one for the books. It can easily be added to American drama, what we study in the schools. All to say, yes, there was an effort to make sure that the event, we didn't lose Usher. This is Usher's narrative. And Playwrights, they felt that it was, people were kind of worried about Usher after that. Did this happen? Did that happen? Did he walk away with this? And then their whole minds are there, and then they have a different perception of Usher, and they're worried and concerned, where we wanted to kind of tell the story that this happened and then this happened and then you know, not just this happened, because there was still more of the story to tell. And that, you guys, that, folks, is called dramaturgy.
Now, was Boundaries in it Playwrights then? Because that song that follows it.
Yeah.
It kind of helps lead onwards.
Right. And it really sets what a beautiful transition. I mean, before everyone's eyes, Usher, you leave one scene and you're alone on the stage. You get to get comfortable, rip everything off, and then ask yourself, well, sing yourself, what are my boundaries? I have no boundaries. Why did I do that? And then you go right into Back to Past Life. We all do that every day. Not about sexual boundaries, this boundaries. We always have that moment. And it's comforting to see You know what I mean? I know it was comforting for people, absolutely, for people to witness and to see, to know that you're not alone. We all question.
Mm-hmm. Before we go any further, though, your other Broadway credit that is one of Connor and I's absolute favorites is Hair. You have this knack for being in these shows that you tend to bear it all in ways. You know, you show your body and all the in the light and strange.
It's part of the formula.
It's part of the formula.
Was there any nervousness about being naked on stage in Hair?
Let's see. I'm early 20s, baby out of school. Heck no, I wanted that debut. Heck no. Yeah. With Diane Paulus? Come on.
I know.
And low key, you don't know this, but I used to listen to Hair. Like, I'm an old soul. I'm sure you can tell by the afro and my beard and the flavor I bring. I've always been a Hair fanatic. The 60s and 70s are the decades I'm obsessed with. They were my favorite subjects in social studies, studying the Vietnam War. I was obsessed with Forrest Gump soundtrack, which Fifth Degree Sing. Aquarius and all that, mm-hmm. You know, so this was right up my alley. It actually helped put me or find a brand. You know what I mean?
Totally. I could actually see that.
Yeah.
And you were HUD, of course, but you replaced in the original cast?
Okay, yes. So when I joined Hair, what happened was I replaced Michael James Scott's track because Michael James Scott replaced Tomar Wilson because Tomar Wilson was going on to Book of Mormon. Now, an interesting, funny fact about that is Tomar Wilson was another person that I semi-idolized in Topeka, Kansas. Now, think about Tomar Wilson. He actually went on to Carnegie Mellon from Topeka. So can you imagine, I'm the first person to join the cast of Hair, and I find out that it's because Tomar Wilson left for my debut. And it was
that
just
is wild.
Unreal. And get this, you know how I told you all that I was obsessed with the Madrigals? Tomar was in that group when I saw the show. Yeah. And then another thing, my school teacher surprised me when I was doing Hair, because if anyone saw Hair, you would know that at the top of the second act, we're in the audience. Oh, Donna. And we're just playing with people looking for my Donna. And we all have sections. Nancy Epic, my high school vocal teacher, found out what section I had. She bought all of we're called the Topeka West Singers. We're like the Madrigals. She bought the Topeka West Singers, all 17 of them. And she waves at me and goes down the line. And it's all people I just graduated from my high school doing this on my debut. I mean, you cannot write that. I was in tears.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Anyway.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
What a dream.
Wow.
You know, as you're talking about being in the audience, I feel like that revival of Hair really did bring this immersive community feel back to Broadway that it didn't have. Like, I remember it was such a huge deal when Dylan and I got to run up on stage at the end of the show, and we felt like, oh my God, we're standing on a Broadway stage. Oh, but also we felt like, you know, we're like teens who are closeted going through, you know, experiencing this theatrical magic and in this theater community. It was really so special. And I feel like Hair was absolutely iconic and came at the exactly right time when it was revived.
I agree. I agree. And that's why, you know, how everyone has like their own sayings of their following, their supporters. I'm going to say my supporters and friends. That's why I call mine tribe, because we're a tribe, and we were called a tribe in Hair. And that's kind of been my knack, is that when I meet, you know, people that love theater, like I love theater, you become my tribe. That's love. Mm. You know what I mean?
I really, really love that you've kept that as a through line with everything beyond Hair. Now, were you with that then until it moved to London? Did you move on past that?
So that's right about when I joined. I joined, and get this, guess who else joined with me right after I joined? Jeanette Byerdell.
Hey.
Yeah.
Queen.
Yes, Queen Byerdell. So what happened is that we knew there was going to be a London production with Cameron McIntosh. And we didn't know if Michael James Scott was going to stay here and do Mormon or go over there and do the West End's version. So whatever he didn't do, I was going to do. So we ended up going to London. So I stayed here. And that's how I met the lovely Annalee Ashford, Jeanette Byerdell, Wallace Smith, the new cast, Ace.
Yes.
Yeah. Diana.
Oh, right. Ace, and Diana came in.
Yeah.
And who was Claude?
Kyle Riabko, right?
It's Kyle.
That's I loved in Spring Awakening.
Oh my gosh, Kyle.
Oh, he had such a really good folky voice.
Oh, he and Gavin Creel are real Claudes. You know what I mean? Yes. They are really real claws. Like, I'm low key, Diane Paulus, if you're listening, I think you should bring hair back. And I think you should bring it back. I just think we need it.
I was actually thinking, you know, when they're renovating the Delacorte now, it's closed now. If they were to reopen it with hair, I think that could be a really fun.
Oh my God.
I think it's been closed for like 18 months or something like that, though. So
really?
Yes, it's like shut down for a while. But I think that, you know, it comes around when you need it, and we need love spread. And
we need love spread. We need something that brings everybody together.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think that, you know, your original music will also do that, because from what I've read about it, it's got a lot of different flavors. And you said you're a 60s, 70s kind of person and all of that. Tell us about this upcoming album that you're working on.
I'm really excited to be working on this album, which would feature one or two original songs written by me. But I wanted to start with what I would call this music genre. I want to call my artistic statement, being that I've never done an album. I wanted to pay homage to where I come from, which is musical theater, my major. So what I'm really doing is 10 reimagined, revisioned, rearranged Broadway covers,
yes,
from beautiful classic era, the nostalgic era of yesteryears, classic baritone of Broadway, whether it's Some Enchanted Evening, even sample the stylings of Johnny Hartman from Pal Joey, his version of Joey, 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 Sinatra's New York, New York, which now is a part of a musical, and perhaps doing a mashup with Empire State of Mind. Fun things like that. And then Speak Up the Devil. I have a song written with Ace and my other friend from Topeka, Kansas, whose father taught me theater at Topeka West High School. His name's Nathan Goheen. Hi, Nathan, who is a graduate of Manhattan School of Music here in New York. So I have a song called Fly, and it was written during the pandemic with my classmate from Carnegie Mellon, Jordan Dean. Some of you might know him from Prince Harry in the Lifetime movie, the redhead.
Oh, fun.
That's Jordan Dean.
Yes.
How you doing, Jordan? So we have this song called Fly, and it's just pretty much about following yourself and flying, being the best you can be. And that's kind of when I honestly remember what my father raised me on, and that the word integrity is because of my background. My dad used to say that to us every day. Do your best, be your best, and act your best because you're a hopper. And he would also speak to us daily about discipline, integrity, courage, character. These were words that were spoken to me when I was in first grade. I remember my mom and I were just talking about this yesterday. And so this is what I'm trying to bring to my work. And a part of that is also honoring what got me into this. And I used to like be obsessed with a lot of these songs that will be on the album. And right now I'm excited to have a 22-piece orchestra. And we're figuring out the logistics, but it's I want to just pay homage to yesteryear with today's voice and look.
Called Antoine Hopper?
It's called Antoine Hopper, the debut.
Oh, perfect.
Ooh, I'm obsessed.
I love y'all. Wait.
It's going to be amazing. It's going to be so amazing. And
you're such a compelling speaker, Antoine.
I know. I don't even want to be talking to you anymore.
I mean it. Oh my gosh. I only want good things for you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. That means so much.
Yeah.
Thank
you have such a nice spirit about you. It's lovely to see and to connect. We sadly have to wrap this episode up. Before we say goodbye, we do like to end with a dose of drama, something to leave the listeners with. It could be something you want to recommend, something you want to rant about, rave about, share an obsession. And I do have an obsession. I've lately been addicted to this album by this Irish artist named Dermot Kennedy and his new album, Unbelievable. Like, Dylan, you would absolutely love it if you have not heard it yet, but
I have heard it.
Oh my God, wonderful. Why didn't you tell me about it?
It's very British pop, in my opinion.
Like, it's like British pop, but mm-hmm. He's Irish, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, I have to listen to it. Okay.
But moody.
What's been your obsession?
Me?
Yes, Dylan.
Hey, Dylan, come on.
I'm reading Mary Rodgers' memoir. So, of course, the daughter of Richard Rodgers, who wrote Once Upon a Mattress, and she has this memoir called Shy that was co-written with one of the New York Times theater critics. I forget which one it is. But it's very dishy. It's like a memoir that you would like hear about. Like, it to me, like, it's not as scathing or as wild as Patti LuPone's memoir, for example, but it spills about like that generation, like Sondheim and that whole era of like young, ambitious, kind of golden age of Broadway's next generation. And, you know, she talks about like dating Hal Prince and how she was in love with Sondheim forever and how she was,
oh my God,
married to a gay man and he fathered three children with her, like just a different time, and how hard it was to kind of, you know, have that chip on her shoulder being Richard Rodgers' daughter. And it's really great. It's really good. I recommend it.
It sounds like fiction.
Yes, that's my drama. What about you, Antoine?
You know, I love to be surprised. And I love to also be scared and gagged. So I'm going to be real. I'm obsessed with this thing on HBO Max called American Monster. Oh. And I'm going to tell you why I'm obsessed with it, because the production values on a 10, even if you go back 8 seasons ago, it's on a 10. The actors are giving you everything. I'm gagged by the acting. It's one of those like unsolved mysteries, but it's not unsolved. What the gag is that it introduces a beautiful family story within the first 20 minutes. Very detailed home videos. Oh, and then boom, the mom's killing everybody in the sleep. You feel me? So it just keeps me on edge. I jump, I look left and right, I get up many times, I make sure I lock the door. I like things like that. I'm weird.
You're speaking my language though. That is so mean.
Okay, so American Monster and Body in the Basement.
Okay. Oh God, that gives me a chill. But
you know, it was Jeffrey Dahmer did it to me. It's that.
Yeah. So American Monster, and it's all like true stories.
Yes, that's exactly. Yes, and it's not corny. Like when they play it back, it's like a movie you're like, and then they'll show actual footage and they'll have actual audio.
It's amazing in these documentaries how much home video there always is of these families and these kids. And
I'm gagged by how much work it is just for one. When I tell you, they have about 13 seasons. It's called American Monster. I couldn't turn it off. I could not turn it off.
I'll have to look into it, because that's you're speaking my genre right there.
That's, I know. But it's what too I scary want for to me.
A little.
What I do want to put in everyone's ear is just, I want to pose a question. No answer right now. But whatever happened to the position of the dramaturg in American musical theater? No, in musical theater. Now in theater, whatever happened to the dramaturg? And I'd be interested in coming back to discuss this with whomever, but I just want to put that out there while we're making cuts left and right.
Yes.
I just want to know whatever happened to the dramaturg. That's all.
I echo it.
I'm glad I wish we had time to dive into it here today.
Antoine, your family. Antoine, your family now. Okay, you're part of the drama family. This has been so much fun. Thank you for hanging out with us today.
Honey, I had my mic on mute, screaming. I love y'all. I screamed. I know I just turned it. I know I turned the pod up. Anyway, I love y'all. Congratulations. And I hope somebody got their life today, because I love each and every one of you, because you love what you do. And a part of that is theater. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Aww. Well, thank you. And I know you're not on the I know you're not on Facebook or TikTok or Twitter, right?
For now.
But you are on Instagram. And what's your IG handle?
At @AntwayneHopper. That's at Antoine Hopper.
Yes. And while everyone's following Antoine, they better follow us. We're at The Drama Podcast. Connor is at Connor McDowell. I am at Dylan McDowell. Thank you again, Antoine. You are a damn delight. And Connor, I will see you next time.
Drama.